Welcome to another edition of Teaching Restored, where we are your weekly teacher council meeting, and we teach, at least talk about, and do all we can to help you become a better teacher of the gospel of Jesus Christ. I'm Kevin Jones.
And I am Julie Hilliard.
And Julie, to start off today, I have two stories for you that are very different and very similar all at the same time.
Okay.
So years ago, I was doing, I was asked to come into a company. The CEO said, I'm having some problems with my employees. They're not taking initiative. They're not going above and beyond. I want them to, and I've given them the latitude to, but they just won't take it. Please, I got to figure out what's going on because no one, it's not happening. What is making it so that they actually will take initiative and do things of their own free will and choice, right? Do things where they, come up with creative ideas or, you know, suggest things that are outside of their normal mode of their job.
Yeah.
What's going on? So I said, okay, great. So I went in and started to talk. I went to meetings, just kind of felt the vibe. And then I started interviewing. I started interviewing people, and one by one, it became more and more clear what was going on. And so I finally put it all together with the I'll say proof that I had of what was happening. And I went to the CEO, and he goes, "Okay, Kevin, what's going on?
Diagnose."
And I had to basically say, "The problem is you." that's not an easy thing to say to someone who's running a good sized company who, you know, really wants to make things, and then to suddenly say, yeah, you're the problem. And going into it, I did not have that as my thought, that it would be the CEO, but it was. And I said, okay, here's what's going on. They don't feel like they can take initiative because of this rule. Where did that rule come from? Oh, I put that rule in place. Yeah, I know. Okay, why did you do that? Because of this. Okay, well, they don't feel like that. And I didn't say it's you, right? And I said, it's because of this that he had done. Who did that? Why was it done? And it kept coming back and back and back and back to him. And all of a sudden he realized, I've trained my people to do exactly what they're doing.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Inadvertently hadn't thought about it. To fix other things, I kind of broke this other thing at the same time.
That's a painful realization.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's not easy to hear, and it's not easy to deal with, and et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so that's story number one. Story number two, I was speaking with a friend of mine who was substituting for seminary. And she substituted one day, but she had heard from one of the students. Yeah, we don't say much. We don't participate really. Granted, it's early morning, right? It's not release time at all, but it's early morning. And she was told, we don't do much in there. In fact, we come late and, you know, just don't expect anything from the students. And she thought, heck no.
That's not the story you want to go in with.
No. I need to do something about this. So she got all prepared. She went in, and that student was absolutely correct. There was one person who was there on time. One person who was there on time. And soon the others started trickling in. They got 10 minutes in, they just said, okay, now we can start because there's enough people to start now, about 10 minutes late. And then later she found out, well, actually I'll get back to that. So she started teaching the lesson, and everyone was looking down. They weren't looking at her. they weren't engaging with her. It was all just looking down as if to say, I'm here, but I'm really not here. I'm checked out, right? I mean, it is early. I get it. But at the same time, she was going to have none of that. So she said, stop, everyone, come with me. And she went into a different room and had this whole experience with them, got their blood moving a little bit, and took them out of the normal way of just doing things, mm-hmm. had this wonderful experience with them, then brought them back into the classroom. And from that point on, their eyes were on her and each other, and they were participating and they were talking and they were jamming with the whole thing. And then the closing prayer was given by an individual who did a phenomenal closing prayer. I mean, it was above and beyond. And she was like, okay, good. You know, it doesn't have to be that way.
Oh my gosh. I just was feeling her pain before.
Right. No kidding. It was a great experience for her. And as she was telling me this, I wondered, and I wondered from this experience and from the previous experience as well, how much do we train the bad behavior of our students?
Kevin, I feel like you're talking to me right now.
No. Oh, you know what? I'm talking to everyone.
Oh, you're talking to me.
Absolutely everyone.
I mean, you know that I have brought topics related to, what do you do when people share too much?
I
trained them to do that.
Right. And here's the thing. But it's not just in a class. It's even with our kids, for example. Right? We say, I cannot believe that they are acting this way. When if we honestly diagnosed it, it very well could lead back to something that we have done that prompts them to act in that way.
Is it even worse when you hear a phrase that you use come out of their mouth as they're acting in that way that makes you wait, they totally got that from me. Yep. That's the worst.
Yes, it is. Absolutely. But at least it's obvious, right? The other things are not so obvious. People participating. Okay, think about this. You're teaching a class. They aren't participating. And I'm going to just give this as an example. I'm not saying, you know, diagnosis for everyone, but overall, why are they not participating? Well, they're not participating because maybe I haven't done anything for them to participate in. Imagine that, right? I haven't asked good enough questions that they would actually have a good answer or be willing to share, or that prompts them to share or
motivates them. Like motivates, not motivated.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like when the only answer is a Sunday school answer, no one wants to answer.
Right. Right. No one wants to answer that. No one. Here's another thing in what she told me. She said that when she got there, everyone came in and just sat. And she's like, okay, where are your scriptures? They're in the closet. Well, go get the scriptures, because that's what this is all about, right? Okay. And they all got up and went and grabbed the scriptures. I mean, and I thought,
oh my gosh,
what? What? How have they been trained so that they would naturally want to come into seminary and not grab their scriptures?
Or maybe how have they been let off the hook every time? Like,
that's exactly it. Yes.
Like with seminary, sometimes especially, we don't want to ruffle feathers. We're like, I'm just so grateful you're here. Don't mm-hmm. keep coming. I want you to feel comfortable. And I've actually even heard stories of parents who have bristled at some of the class rules that a seminary teacher has brought up, because they're like, I can barely get my kid to go. And then they've got this strict teacher who won't da 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 da. Like, and the parents are like, just make it as easy as possible for them to be there. And so in an effort to not ruffle feathers, they're like, we're just glad you're here. Even if you just are going to look at your phone the whole time, thanks for being here.
Yes. Yes. You know, that's a really, really good point. I'm glad you brought that up, because so often it is where cowering down from the demands of other people when those can easily be over. Well, I don't want to say easily all the time, but sometimes easily be overcome by just sticking to the guts. An example of that, years ago, we decided to, I was Young Men's president. That's how many years ago that was. And we decided to do a bike trip down the coast. There were parents who freaked out. It was as death threats, maybe not that far, but it was seriously a
better story if there were death threats.
What was that?
He said it's a better story if there were death threats.
Well, it didn't go that far, but it would have been a better story. You're right. But it was, oh my goodness, you can't do this. Someone's going to die. I'm literally, someone's going to die on this trip, Kevin. I'm like, no, we'll be okay. My son doesn't know how to ride a bike. Well, he'll learn how to ride a bike. Well, you can't expect that. And I mean, all these things coming in of, you know, you can't. So, and it would have been really easy to go, okay, well, we're going to go to, you know, we're just going to go down the street because we kind of lived out in the wilderness anyways. We're just going to go down the street and camp at this one thing and hike. I mean, just do something really, really simple, right?
To lower the standard, basically. Yeah.
Common denominator. Yeah. The whole thing, right? But I don't think that's the way the Lord is trying to parent us. He's not trying to least common denominator us. Right? He's trying to lift us all. Where are we at? Great. Go to the next step. What is the next step for everyone? In a group, that's a little bit more difficult because everyone is a little, we're on all different levels. It's not even levels, but I'll say levels for now, right? Yeah. And so it's difficult to say, here's the rule that I'm going to have, and you just stick to the rule, right? So you come down to the least common denominator, and you train everyone to come down to the least common denominator. And everyone, even if they were so gung-ho for whatever, or, I mean, I'm going to kind of show my little bias here. But overall, if you think about learning, just learning, period, right? A lot of times in schools, we go to the least common denominator, and those who are so excited to learn now are just, you know, what do I have to do to get an A? Just tell me what I have to do, and I'll do the least I can, and to actually get that, and I'm done, and I'm out.
Yeah, they're not inspired. It's like the story that you told at the very beginning. You know, how do you inspire people to want to be better? It isn't necessarily by lowering the standard.
Right.
Or like you said, training them to behave in the way that they are behaving.
Right. But we do it. Yeah. We do it inadvertently all the time.
Right.
So I want to ask you, in what ways might we accidentally train our students, our friends in a missionary discussion, our children, how might we accidentally train them in a way that isn't healthy?
Like, do you want some examples?
Yeah. Anything off the top of your head that you can think of?
Well, I'm just going to like be really autobiographical and tell you things that I do to train people to. So I don't know if you've ever, this is embarrassing, whatever. I'm just going to say it anyway. Sometimes when I'm feeling insecure, I talk more. And so sometimes when I'm teaching, I'll talk too much. And then people like in a group setting or whatever, they talk less because they know that I'm going to do the talking.
There you go. And
so, you know, that's that way with my kids. If they, like, if I talk too much, they think I'm giving them a lecture, so they say less. Yes. And so I'm training them not to be as engaged because I talk too much.
And how many times, this is more proverbial than anything, but how many times have we heard a parent say, what do you have to say for yourself?
That's not inspiring them to respond to. I know. You're exactly right. Cadence. And what do you have to say about that?
I really don't want to know, but what do you have to say? Right. I trained you into not saying anything. And now all of a sudden I expect you to come out with a full explanation.
Here's another example in a classroom setting. You're like, this information, this information, this information, this information, this information. What are your thoughts?
My brain exploded.
But which part? I don't want to answer. Oh, what if I talk about the wrong thing? I'm not. I mean, it really does actually prompt insecurity. So talking too much is one. That's another one that I can think of off the top of my head has to do with what I alluded to a little bit earlier, where when you encourage so much discussion without any parameters or boundaries. So for example, I feel very strongly about this, and we've talked about it here before, that you want to validate and engage in every comment that people make.
Good.
But if you allow that to go on without saying, I'm going to take one more comment, or, hey, we are going to keep moving, you know, or whatever, or you allow the topic to go way off topic. And because I will find that sometimes because of that, people will selectively listen and hear a point, and then they will make, and it has nothing to do with what we're talking about. And so really, truly, you have to still be leading, not manipulating, but leading. It's a fine line.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can't, otherwise you'll train people to just like hijack, or you'll train people to take the discussion in wherever direction they want to go, because you validate every response.
Yep. So from that experience, it sounds like you have experience or have seen the experiences where when we do it, I would say in an unhealthy way, and I'm just going to label it that, whatever, but we can actually train two different behaviors at one time. For some people, we train them that they can go on and on and on and on. And others, we train them that we're going to let other people go on and on and on, and you need to be quiet because we're going to allow that. So we train half the group that they can go on and the other half not to.
Yep.
Isn't that terrible. Interesting? Yeah, it is. But we do it.
Well, okay, one more. Because Kevin, I'm full of them. I make a lot of mistakes. One more.
Please.
We train people not to think when we ask stupid questions.
Oh, so, so true. Oh my goodness. Expound on that one, please.
I just knew you would love it because you love questions.
Yes.
So if we only ask questions, I mean, this is just a super easy example, but like if we ask questions, like I said, that only have Sunday school answers, people are only trained to give the Sunday school answers, and then they're not really thinking for themselves.
Right.
Or if we train people to give the answers that we expect because we're asking leading questions, then they only give the expected answer. Versus if we ask honest, reflective questions, we're challenging people to think. We're challenging them to think about application, et cetera. So really, truly making sure we're asking thought-provoking questions versus leading or, you know, other stupid questions.
Right. And honestly, that's one reason that, so I'll just throw this out there just because I can, just because we're leading this podcast.
Okay, right now, you totally can say anything you want.
Yeah. Well, look at that.
So powerful.
Yes. Yeah, so powerful. Not really. So I just finished the book about how to teach the gospel with questions, and I turned it into publishers. And by the way, if any of you are out there, you know that you want to publish this book. So yeah, just contact me anytime soon. So anyways, but beyond that, one of the reasons I wrote this is because too many of us take our questions for granted.
Yes.
And we just ask questions, and we're told to ask open-ended questions. All right. Well, which, you know, typically is it's not a yes or no question. It's another, right? It's right. The opposite of a yes or no question. And so we ask, all right, so where was Lehi going when he left Jerusalem? Into the wilderness. Did he know where he was going? No. Okay. Where did he come from? That's an open-ended question, right?
Right.
Jerusalem. Right. And then I get, you know, some teachers get so frustrated that, you know what, they're just not engaged in the lesson. I feel like it's kind of dead. Well, that's because we're asking the wrong questions. We're asking the questions that are way too simple, and it's not using their brain. And so we're training them into not using their brain. We're training them to be acted upon.
Yeah.
Rather than acting in the lesson.
Exactly.
Yeah. Some more. Start time. Oh. How many of us have trained our class that it's okay to start 5-10 minutes early? Or no, late. Sorry.
Late. I was like, wait, what?
Yeah, early.
Actually said to me last year, he's like, well, class doesn't really start until 7:15. I'm like, baloney, class starts at 7. And he's like, no, it's 7:15 for sure. I'm like, no, the start time is not. Like, I mean, it was so funny. We argued about this. He was convinced that the actual start time was 15 minutes later than it was. And I'm like, I promise you. So
right.
We didn't actually fight about it, but you know what I mean?
I totally get it.
He was convinced.
That's funny.
It is funny.
So not only start time, but start procedure. For example, I have, I've heard of some classes where the first 15, 20 minutes, they just talk about how the week went, right? And they're all excited and it's an effort to engage, right? It's an effort to get them talking and it gets them talking. Then that's great. And then honestly, they have in a way wasted half of the discussion time. And we trained them into that being normal.
Right. So it's interesting because I remember actually this specific insight from Kurt Franken where he was talking about how you want to do that on purpose. And so you priming can go duke it out.
He called it.
But he called it priming the pump. But I think that what you're saying is so, so important that you're doing it with a specific intention.
Yes.
And then it's different. You have to put boundaries on things.
Right.
You can't just if it's just to talk about your weekend, that's not priming the pump. If you're being like, I remember Greg and Brad Gillespie talking about how on Thursdays to get to know each other better and to create unity and bonding, they know that on Thursdays, they're going to ask a personal question just to create chat. And yes, it's part of their tradition and they're doing it on purpose and it serves a purpose. So that's different than, like you said, creating, I just want to differentiate the habit of, well, we're going to just chat for the first 15, 20 minutes anyway. And you let it go on too long. You let it just be abstract and chitty chat. And half the people are engaged. And I would say half the people probably aren't even paying attention. People might even start coming later because they don't really care about that part.
Right.
So you're training like a whole bunch of things if you don't put parameters on those. They have a place. They just have to be conscious and on purpose and intentional with parameters.
And sometimes our actions have ripple effects. I'll give you a quick example. So going back to that, one of the classes that I was thinking of just said, all right, what was the best part of your week? And 15, 20 minutes, and every single person went around 15, 20 minutes around what the best part of their week was, right? Well, then what would happen is that some people would say, I went to so-and-so's house and we had this party and it was so much fun. And there were people in there who weren't invited to it. And what did those people think? Do you think that they wanted to be in the lesson or were they thinking about, wow, I wasn't invited to that. Did they not like me?
Great example of an unintended ripple effect.
Yeah. Right. And then you got half the class who they're not there now. You've just kicked them out of the class mentally. Yeah. And the other ones are, like you said, they're not listening to what other people are saying. They're actually formulating their response and what they're going to say and how great it is. I mean, so again, how we use the first part of the class and the last part of the class, we are training people possibly into poor behavior. Now, at the same time, we can reverse that. And what you said with Greg and Brad, they're intentionally doing it for a specific reason that actually helps further the discussion toward gospel conversations. And wow. And that's powerful when it's done right.
Right.
And they're training them into that.
Exactly. So you can have a good intention, but when you consider the strategy, you also have to make sure that you consider the parameters that you might need to put in place to avoid unintended ripple effects.
Yes. How about the use of scriptures?
Oh, like overuse, underuse? Are you talking? Oh, are you thinking like I think about sometimes how some classes have a tradition of how they're going to read the scriptures, where they go from person to person to
I
person.
hadn't thought about that, but I like that a lot.
Well, the reason that I thought of that is because you're training people not to volunteer. I mean, I don't know. Like, I never really thought about that before until right this second. And like, it's, I think that sometimes when you go verse to verse to verse to verse, people don't necessarily pay attention as much. They're just like focused on their
They're
verse.
one verse, right?
Yeah. So you
Right.
almost train people not to be as focused on the content of the verses that they're reading. So that may be me being a little hypercritical just because that sometimes it's not my favorite because my daughter has dyslexia and that makes her really uncomfortable. And so I feel a little sensitive when
Sure.
that happens in class because it makes her uncomfortable. But what were you meaning by how you use scriptures?
Well, for example, some classes never pull out scriptures.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And if they do, sometimes it'll say, okay, look up this verse. Who can read it? One person will pull it up and read it, and no one else even bothers.
Versus everybody following along. Like I was thinking,
Right.
even on their phones, everybody following along. That's a great point. You know, one of the things that I do to combat that, I don't know if this
Yes.
is obviously not the place for this, but I will actually have people go on journeys in their scriptures. Like if you have your phone, you know, now click on this link to this, and what
That's
about this
great.
cross reference? And, you know, have them actively do that so that they can't just read the verse in front of them. But the habit is, oh, I've got to take out my scriptures because we're not just going to read it. We're probably going to go somewhere with it.
Right. We're gonna dive into it.
Yeah, we're going to
Yeah.
dive into it.
I like that. That's great, Julie. Good.
Sorry, I didn't know that that was, I maybe we're not in solutions mode.
No, coming up with solutions is good because we've all seen this, and this happens to all of us at some point. We get into one bad habit, then we get into another one, and it happens. Here's another one. Who asks the questions?
So good.
Right?
Are you the only person asking questions or are you encouraging other people to come up with questions?
Right.
Oh, that's so
What if we were able to train them into them asking the questions?
So how would you do that?
That's a
Like I'm
little
thinking,
harder to do.
so like the first thought that I had is, are you thinking, for example, after verses, or let's say you read something or you discuss it or whatever, what questions do you have about that?
That's on a basic level. That's probably the easiest way to start it is what
Yeah.
questions do you have about this, right?
But I don't think that that's necessarily like people usually breeze past that question. So
Right.
take it deeper.
Okay, so what if you said, what if you brought up a scripture and said, what about that makes you think that something in there isn't right or it doesn't match up? One of the tactics of using questions is to take two seemingly opposing views and put them together, ones that you believe in both, but then put them and then hit them against each other and say, okay,
Butt
wow,
them
they seem to contradict each other. Why is that? And start talking about that, and then almost naturally they will want to bring up questions. Well, why don't you do, why is it this way on this side? Well, why is it this way on this side? And they are starting to find an answer. When they are looking for answers, they will start asking questions. If they're not looking, if they're just being fed, then they're not going to be asking questions. But if you can get them to be looking for it, then they will be asking questions.
That is such a great insight. If you can get them to be looking for the conclusions, they will naturally ask more questions.
Right.
So looking for the insights, looking for the learning, looking instead of just feeding, feeding, feeding.
Right.
I'm super bad at that.
I don't know that any of us are great at it. To give people an out here, a lot of the teaching that happens in the church is two times a month. And
Yeah.
honestly, if I'm a teacher in Sunday school, for example, I'm teaching once a month because the other person is teaching the other one. And it's really hard to practice these things when we're not teaching it that often. So, okay, let's go on a little tangent, Julie. Thank you for bringing this up. If I'm just teaching once a month, if I've got a Sunday school, young men, young women's calling, elders quorum, and Relief Society, where I'm probably teaching once every 3 months or whatever it might be, how can we practice this? Because that's not going to be enough to really try to put this all together. How might you go about doing that?
Okay, so it's interesting that you say that, because one of my fears with getting released is I'm like, now what about content for the podcast? Because I take so much of my experiences and the things that I learn, I'm like, what am I going to do? And I realized that now's the time for me to actually practice all of it. Ironically, now that I'm not teaching anymore, I feel like I might have more opportunities to practice it in a more natural setting. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Like, I think if we just isolate our practice to the classroom or whatever, that we are limiting ourselves, where the real opportunities to practice these skills are with our families and with our friends.
Yes. And it doesn't even have to be in gospel circumstances. It can be in everyday circumstances where we notice, oh, I'm training them into responding this way. I'm training them into saying this or acting this way. I wonder if I can do this differently. I wonder if I can get them to ask the questions.
Yeah, so that's they can really have good.
Right?
Okay. So you're saying it doesn't have to be gospel discussions, that these are principles that could literally be practiced about any topic.
Pretty much.
I love it. Yeah. That's good.
I wrote down here, action items or takeaways. So do we train them, I'll say missionaries do, I think, a great job of this. Missionaries.
With invitations.
Yes. With an invitation at the end saying, all right, now, what are you going to do about what you learned, about what we talked about?
Yeah.
Will you go do that? And then they follow up with that, right? Whereas in probably most all classes, traditional, you know, church classes, it's teach, 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 teach. All right. Good. You learned something? Yeah. Good. Peace out. And I'm out. Right? It's not, oh, by the way, we should go do something about this. And so we can train that good habit of, now that we have learned this, what are we going to do about it?
So are you ever hesitant to do that?
To
ask people to do something? Like, I find myself being a little bit hesitant because, oh, this is so bad. Why am I being so honest? I should stop being this
Thank you,
honest.
Julie.
So sometimes when I'm sitting in a class and somebody says, I want to challenge you to, and they set the goal for me, I'm like, nope, no involvement, no commitment. I'm not committed. That doesn't work for my life the way that you just outlined it.
Yeah.
And so I'm a little bit emotionally detached from the commitment that they are asking me to make. So how do you overcome that?
I have a suggestion. This actually just happened. This just happened. So this month in the bishopric, this month was my month to conduct fast and testimony meeting. All these testimonies, wonderful testimonies were given. At the end, I got up to conclude the meeting and I said, something along the lines of, I hope you felt the Spirit today. And often when the Spirit speaks to us, the Spirit whispers something that we need to act on and do. And I hope you listen to that. And I hope you go do it.
Okay. So you're saying that the invitation is less specific and more listen to the Spirit. What are you being prompted to do now? Like, do something about what we've just discussed.
From the teacher end of things. Yes. It doesn't have to be, you will go do this. Well, in a missionary setting, you know, they want to prompt them to go read this chapter or read this, you know, whatever it is. But a lot of times if when we're doing a classroom or when we're talking with our kids, we feel the Spirit, what is the Spirit? What did the Spirit just teach you that you need to go do?
Right.
And then you can even have them share that. So in that way, it's specific to each individual person, but it doesn't have to be, I challenge you. That's fine as well. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but if we overuse that, it's just like, oh, here's another challenge. I'm going to do whatever. And we pass
on. I actually do think there's something wrong with it.
Do you?
Is that terrible for me to say?
No.
I feel like just personally, I'm very passionate about this. Like when, you know, you talk about like we have a ward goal for something, I'm like, why should I feel committed to that? You didn't involve me in coming up with the goal. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of a stinker, Kevin. I'm kind of a stinker sometimes. And so in my mind, I really subscribe to the philosophy of no involvement, no commitment. Mm-hmm. So maybe you could involve the person. And because you've got a big group, sometimes what you can do is say, let's share ideas with each other. What would be a way that we could apply this?
That's good.
You know, what is a commitment that we could make together as a class?
Yes.
To apply that this week.
Yes. You know? I like that.
I have been specific in the marriage class that I'm teaching right now because I have exercises. Like we've got skills and we're trying to practice these skills. And so at the end, I'm giving everybody homework. And I was so thrilled when this week, one of the couples came back and they're like, well, you've given this assignment and told us to practice this. But what you didn't say is that we actually need to do it more than once because doing it just one time is not enough. Like we need to do this over and over and over. I'm like, oh, not only are you taking my invitation, you're like wanting to make it daily. This is incredible.
That's great.
Like, they now are involved. And I'm telling you that what we just added an extra class where we're going to come and practice the skills together because people are so like, we got to figure out how to actually do something with this. And so if we can get our classes to the same point where we're discussing, how are you going to apply this in your life? What might you do? Because sometimes we just sit there and we're like, wah, wah. And because of that disengagement, it's hard for the Spirit to be like, tap, tap, knock, knock, knock. Maybe you could do something about this, Julie. But then when somebody says something that resonates, you're like, oh, I can do that.
Yeah.
And so maybe that kind of involvement is a way to get past the,
yes,
you know, kind of,
I love
dictated
that
invitation.
Yes. And I think a better question than what are you going to do about it? Or I'm sorry. What is something that we can do to, let's say you're talking about, reading scriptures, right? What, instead of asking a question like, what can we do to be better scripture readers? Change it around just a little bit. And this little change can be absolutely huge, but instead of saying, what can we do to be better scripture readers, saying, what have you felt prompted to do to be a better scripture reader yourself? That way it becomes much more personal. They're not just, okay, you know, let me give you the ABC XYZ answer that's just so easy. Well, you can just read it here. You can do this. No. Oh, what am I going to do? Oh, that's a little bit different. Then there's a little bit more emotion and passion in it. And then people start exchanging novel ideas that they've probably never thought of before, like you were saying, right? It's not just the same old things that we've heard all the time that they can run off, but it's, oh, they're going to do that. Well, maybe I can do that too.
Right. Mm-hmm. So here's like, I think this is very connected to the point you just made in my brain, but I hope when it comes out of my mouth, it's going to feel connected. So just today, in my class that I taught this morning, there was a gentleman who made a comment that was a really great comment. He was talking about, I'm trying to remember, we're in 3 Nephi 8 through 11. And he was talking about the, doubtings and disputations that started to kind of creep in among the people. And we were talking about why disputations might occur among believers, like among people who believe. And as he was talking about it, he was talking about it as like, they, like, well, they might have did it. And I said, stop. I said, it's you. So why might this happen to you or us? And so he's like, okay. So we, and he switched everything to be a we or an I, and it just changed the whole thing. So instead of feeling like it was a finger pointing exercise, you know, like here's some suggestions for other people. It was a very personal, this is happening in me. Sometimes I'm having disputation. Sometimes I'm having doubt. Sometimes I'm having struggles with my own scripture study. And this is one way that I could shift my behavior. And it becomes very personal. And that changed the whole kind of even, you know, the feeling in the class about it. Instead of it being external, it became internal.
That's good. We can take that and kind of use that same principle. And when we're talking about just, here's the story, it's always, here's the story and how does it apply to us? And we hear that all the time. We know that as teachers, but too often I think we get just involved in here's the story. And then we train people to just think about the story rather than how is it applying to you? Not they or just the story, but you in particular. What are you going to do about it?
Right. Like, so I have this one girl that is this woman that comes to class all the time that holds us so accountable for this. I just absolutely love her and appreciate this so much. And she's like, sometimes I'm an unbeliever. So this is what happens to me when I'm in a place of unbelief. And she'll just be like, sometimes I am the person that's sinning and needs to repent. Sometimes I, and she puts herself on the bad side and just reminds all of us that, guess what? We are there sometimes. So we can finger point all we want, but that's where we are sometimes. And so it becomes much more like personal and profound. And like the stories aren't just stories. They are, this is a story about me. Yeah. That's I love good. It.
Oh, that's so, I'm glad you shared that. Whoever that is, bless her heart.
Bless her heart.
Yes.
I love her. Becca Daly. She's amazing.
Here's another one. Interacting. We train people oftentimes to my mind just went poof right there with another almost pet peeve that I have. Okay, here's, you want to know a pet peeve I have? You know what? I'm going to share with you a pet peeve that I have. When we're having a discussion, maybe I'm leading the discussion, right? People look at me to answer. Why? Stop looking at me. This is a question for everyone. There's a lot of other people in this room that you can look at and talk to. This isn't about me. This is about everyone here. So when we are answering questions, it is so easy for us to train people that I'm going to ask the question and you answer me. Why don't we train them into answering it as a group and to everyone else there? So that, and the visual way that I would see that happening is that when they start answering, they're looking around at other people too. And it's so not good. Just at me being the teacher.
So the trained behavior is two parts. Like the other part is if people do ask a question and you pipe in to answer, then you are training them to look to you for the answers.
Right.
Right. Mm-hmm. And just like that, if there is a question that gets put out there, like, wouldn't it be awesome if everybody was kind of like, huh, what do you think? Like, yes. I think part of that has to do with how our classrooms are set up.
Yes. Agreed. Right.
So that makes it a little bit difficult.
Mm-hmm. It does. But I
love that idea.
But the way that we typically do it, it's more of a spoke model where I'm going to ask you, then I'm going to ask you, then I'm going to ask you, and you're going to all give it right back to me. Right. Let's do a matrix where we're all doing it to each other and talking and And that way, and when we do it like that, they are more likely to ask questions of each other. And if we're having a one-on-one dialogue, because so much of when we ask questions as a teacher, so much of it is I'm asking a question and the person who's answering it, it's suddenly everyone else is gone in the room and it's a conversation between me and that person.
Right. You and that person. Yeah.
It doesn't need to be. It can be a conversation with everyone there and they are talking to everyone, not just me. And then when they do that, they're more likely to ask questions themselves. So there's another way to get them to, or help them prompt to be asking questions.
I love that. And I've actually seen when that's happened effectively, and I have loved the fruit of that. But it's hard. I mean, it takes a little bit of ability for you as a teacher to be willing to allow that kind of, you know, natural, organic thing to happen, because you basically are just a participant versus the driver.
Yes. Now, that's a great way to look at that. Yeah.
Yeah. I love it, though.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Okay. Here's the last one I'll bring up. I've mentioned this in the past, where someone will be giving a prayer and I'll stop them and say, just stop in the middle of the prayer. Stop it.
I can't.
I've done this, right? And I try not to say, you're doing this wrong and you're bad for this. I'm saying, you're doing what we all do. We all go, da-da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da-da, I'm thankful for this day. Please help us to be happy. Please help us to be safe and get home safe. And then, all right? And we're, it's just like this flow. It's like a sine wave going up and down and up and down. And we know, right? But, in these cases, I've stopped them and said, stop. Is that coming from your heart? No. All right. We all do what you're doing. We all do. So don't feel badly about it. I totally get it. I do it. I get that.
Right.
But I don't want us in this class to go through feeling the spirit like this and then go back to da 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 da. Here's another example. Yeah. Elder Bednar. When we were in Alabama, he came to our stake and he spoke to the youth. No adults were allowed to be there except for very, very few. I happened to be one of the bodyguards of the building, not of Elder Bednar, but of the building, right? I had to make sure that no other adults came in. This was only for youth.
That's cool.
And so only the youth came in. They had this great discussion. They asked questions. He answered. He asked them. It just fabulous. He sat down. They had the song, and then they had the prayer. And then immediately it was a chatter, and they're loud. And he got up and he said, excuse me, my young friends, you have just had an apostolic blessing bestowed upon you. And it does not seem that you understood what just happened in this room.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Right. There is some reverence and there is some, the spirit was just thrown out. I mean, he didn't say those exact things, but that's kind of what he was getting across, right? We just go back to whatever we're normal doing. And a lot of times when we have a lesson, the same thing, I'm going to go back to the same prayer that I give in front of everyone else. And and no, let's do this with some sincerity. Let's actually have a prayer. And every time we pray together, this group right here, every time we pray, we're going to tell the Lord how we feel and what we're thankful for and our struggles and our concerns and be real about it. And I think sometimes by letting that go, we just train them into, it's okay to have a prayer that you actually didn't ever think about. And really the only thing you were asking for is that we get home safely.
You know, it's, so I have been so blessed with this. So maybe I'm sentimental right now because I'm getting released, right? Mm-hmm. But with this class that I teach, I didn't do this. They did it. But the prayers that are uttered in this class are a sermon in and of itself. Mm-hmm. Like, I cannot tell you, I have learned how to pray from the people that attend this class.
Wow.
And so I think, I mean, that's been one of the really, really touching things for me personally that's been instructive about the culture that we've created in that class. And like I said, I didn't have anything to do with it, but they did it by bringing their authentic selves to the space and then being willing to put their thoughts and feelings into a prayer that all of us are participating in. And I think that it has changed the discussion. Like, it has changed the way that we feel the spirit. It has acknowledged the spirit when it's been felt. Like, I don't think people realize just how important an opening and a closing prayer are in an experience like that. And I didn't before experiencing it for myself. And like I said, this is totally independent of me. But because that culture was created, when someone stands up to pray in that class, you see them take a deep breath and you see them really think. And it's a slow prayer and it takes time. It's beautiful.
Wow.
Yeah. I love that. I know what you're talking about. I have experienced it.
That is pretty neat.
It's amazing. And
I think that we can have those amazing experiences in classes not just go through the rote things that we do, but let's shoot for those amazing experiences. Let's shoot for, wow, that was it. We walk out and go, that was incredible. Now, can we do that every single time? No, that's not possible. But we want to be able to at least sometimes come out and go, my mind is blown how incredible these kids are, or my kids after a discussion, or this investigator, or whomever, just wow. We want to walk out saying wow. Now, one of the ways so what we've talked about overall is sometimes we as teachers train the people that we are teaching into bad habits or unhealthy habits, I'll say, right? So one of the ways to identify it is to look at our class and say, all right, what are they doing that kind of annoys me? What are they doing that I don't like or that isn't good? And then look at yourself and say, what am I doing to make it so that is really easy for them to do, or that's their only way to go. If you think about it, water, if you take, when you're at the beach, if you have a stream coming down into the beach, you can take the sand and make a path for it to move down, and it will follow the path every single time, right? So just kind of do that with your class. All right, if I want this kind of a behavior, well, then I have to mold it this way and lead them to do that, and they will naturally do it. It's not trying to pull teeth to get them to have a really heartfelt prayer. It's, I've molded this path so that when they get there, they almost want to do it, or they do want to do it because it's a natural thing.
Yes, so, I love
that. So look at the things that may annoy you about your class and then say, what am I doing to instill that in them accidentally? And then reverse engineer and say, okay, what can I do to create a new path? So
I love that.
Whatever. That's a great... Thanks. Whatever that takes for each of you, go do that. Just identify one thing and go do that. Whatever it is. Don't care what it is. Just go do one thing. Something from it. One thing. Always. All right, that's all I have. Any last thoughts there, Julie?
Oh, that was so good. It gave me so much to think about. It was interesting because when you started to say that last part there, I was like, that's how you identify it. Like, I hadn't really thought, well, I'm like, how do you figure out what you're doing? Because they're kind of blind spots. What you're saying is that these things are kind of blind spots. And you are exactly right. Identify what is a struggle for you. Identify what's irritating to you or whatever, right? And don't be a person who just takes it for granted. Think about, what do I have control over? What can I do to influence this and be an agent rather than allowing that to act upon each and every class?
Spot on. I love it.
Well said, Kevin. Well done.
Thank you, Julie. I appreciate it. Thanks everyone for listening. Like, share, subscribe, do all that good stuff if you would. Help other teachers know what you know and become better teachers yourselves. As you help other teachers, you become a better teacher. Thanks for listening, everyone. Take care.
Thank you.